Welcome to Hello Dysfunction. This is episode 358. I'm your host, Patafria. Lev. Lev's here with me. Welcome back. Happy to be here. I just want to start off by saying happy birthday to Juicy. Yesterday was Juicy Boosie's birthday, and we love you so much. I hope you know that, and I hope you celebrate it however you wanted. And you've always been such a huge support for the show and all members of this community. Also, a friend to me and others, and I just want you to know we love you so much. Yeah. So, yeah, I hope you had a great birthday. Mm-hmm. We were just here 2 days ago, so welcome back. Here we are.
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday, the late. First.
I don't even know what time it is, but it's late.
It's late. It's like 10 p.m. Yeah, we're recording late tonight, which is rare, but I'm happy we got in here. I wasn't feeling good earlier. I woke up. I had a migraine for most of the day. It would not go away, and then finally it broke like around maybe 6:30 p.m. So I was like, let me just get ready and see how I feel. And yeah, we were able to make it in, so I'm happy.
I wasn't feeling that well either.
Yeah, what'd you have going on?
I just wasn't feeling that great,
but yeah,
we pulled it together.
Yeah, I'm glad we made it. Last night I finally watched Paris is Burning. And I was trying to explain to you what that was. A lot of people have mentioned it over the years, and it's a must watch. And last night, I was just home, and I wanted to watch something, and I remembered, let me see what that's about. So I checked it out. It's really good. It talks about all of the, like, ballroom gatherings in, like, 1980 in New York with, like, the drag scene and like all where voguing originated from, where Madonna stole it from.
Right.
And
it's
yeah,
like it's Studio 54 vibes a little bit.
No, Studio 54 is like a nightclub. This is like their own private
but it's the '80s, early '80s.
Early '80s, and it's like kind of like a pageant, but it's like, you know, it's like a competition.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Was it dope?
Yeah. It's basically like a fashion show, but also like performative. So like dancing and like, you know, really like putting on a show. It's not just about the clothing is a big part of it, but you know, it's also the theatrics and everything.
It's
and
like a battle.
Exactly.
Like it's like a battle.
Exactly. Like it's a battle for the gays.
Got
is
it.
What it is. That's how they described it. And they have like different gangs, basically different houses are basically like different gangs for the gays. And they have names for their houses, and it's got just it. It's a real sense of community. And it was really touching because they talked about like each house has a mother,
right?
And some have a father also, like the head of the houses. And they talked about how, like, a lot of young people, that started because a lot of the young people in the gay community would be banished from their families or excommunicated from their homes and their families, and they had nobody. And so they would come and be a part of this and need that support and that sense of community and everything.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it's like community for people that needed it
at
that time, especially in the 80s with so much crazy, you know, thought about
trans for sure.
people or gay people. It wasn't really accepted much.
Right.
Back then.
So that was really good. I watched that, and then you know how when you're streaming and you finish something, it'll suggest something similar. So it went into this documentary called The Stroll. And it's basically a trans woman. She was asked to be part of a documentary, but she didn't like that she didn't have a lot of creative control. So she was like, let me just direct my own. And I love that. And I didn't finish it, but I watched a lot of it, and it's excellent. And it's basically about, you know, sex workers that work the street in the meatpacking district around the same time frame.
So it's New York City.
Right. and how they had this designated area. They all looked out for each other. If, you know, any tricks got out of line or anything like that, they all came together. All and community. Like, yeah, that's yeah, cool. it was really good. I want to finish it maybe tonight. But excellent recommendation. It's called The Stroll. And it's nice because she gets to reconnect all these years later with women that she worked the street with back then.
Okay, so it's done in the future and it looks back.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, you know, they're revisiting their corners that they were at, like, you know, where they specifically worked and... just talking about all the different areas and where they would dip off with the tricks, and they tell some stories about when it got scary or, you know, whatever. Yeah, it was really good though. I highly recommend that.
New York was gentrified when they went back.
Yeah. Yeah. They talk about that, how it's completely different now, and that's a bummer.
Yeah,
for sure. So, we were thinking this episode is going to be kind of like a get to know me episode. We've gotten a lot of requests for like an introduction for new listeners. We've got a lot of new subscribers. And if you haven't gone back that far, you know, you might not be super familiar about who I am, where I came from, how this came about. So yeah, we figured that this episode would kind of focus on that.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
So, I'm Patafria. I am the host of this show. The show was originally started with a friend, season one, and that is no longer. I have taken it over myself. I am from Richmond, California, but lived there my entire life. And I have three daughters, a son, and a granddaughter. And been a hustler my whole life, had many different jobs in many different fields, also did sex work for a huge part of my life, was a dom, still am a dom, semi-retired dominatrix. Yeah, so I've wore a lot of hats over the years, been podcasting for 10 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's something that I really enjoy. I get a lot of good feedback from it. So we've kind of just grown the show, and this is what I do now full time.
I know we've told it before, but how did you get into podcasting and start? I think
that's
interesting for people.
I started 10 years ago. I didn't even know what podcasting was. I had heard the word, but I had never heard one, didn't know where to find them, any of that. They were pretty new back then, and I had a friend, DJ Fresh, and he, among other people, somebody else reminded me yesterday, actually reached out and kind of gave me my flowers. His name's Rossi from HBK. You know Rossi?
Yeah, for sure.
Rossi's great. He reached out to me, and like we've continued following each other over the years, but we never really talk. And he hit me yesterday kind of out of nowhere, and he was like, you know, I just want to really give you your flowers because, you know, like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, something like that, I had mentioned to you that you really need to do some type of show, whether it be like YouTube or podcast or something. And he reminded me, I guess I told him, like, I'm really like shy for real. Like, I'm really socially awkward. And I guess I broke all this down to him, and I was like, you know, people have suggested it, but I really don't think I could do it. And he was like, just seeing you over the years, how you pushed through that and you've done it and you're like doing really well. I'm just really fucking proud of you. And
that's cool.
It made me hell of emotional. Yeah. And I was just like, thank you so much. He's like, I've just seen your growth. You
kind of forget who's tuned in.
Yeah.
When you get a odd call from someone.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, hey,
and I didn't even remember us having that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
So
totally.
It was just super nice. But
it's nice to get praise from someone that you don't expect and out of the blue.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good.
So DJ Fresh and I were friends, and we knew each other from 10 years before that, and if not more. And he had, you know, reached out to me and was talking to me about starting a podcast. Like, you really should start one. You should start one. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know. What is that? Like, radio? Like, I didn't know what the hell it was. And I would brush him off about it all the time. And so he finally reached out to me one day and he's like, look, I know, like, you're not going to do it yourself. So, you know, I really want you to do this. And I'm willing to, like, do it with you, you know, as long, you know, as long as you commit the time or whatever. He's like, I'll get the studio, you know, do the engineering, the editing, whatever we need to do, I'll do it all, just like show up. And so I was like, okay, we can try it. And
how did that go? How long did it take you to kind of catch a groove with that, or did you immediately kind of...
I'm really comfortable with him. So because he was there, it made it so much easier.
Were you surprised, though, that it came naturally besides him being there? Do you feel like, because I feel like you podcast, podcasting comes kind of naturally for you. You're a good conversation.
Yeah, no, he made it comfortable for me. So like I couldn't have done it by myself, for sure not.
Got it.
Especially with the type of people that were coming in, like that show. It was called the Ask Potafria Show, but we featured a lot of like musicians and artists right. in the Bay Area, some of which were like personal friends. So those ones were easier. But like some people I had never met before, and some were like bigger name artists. And he really put me at ease, you know, interacting with strangers and like people, you know, that I wasn't super comfortable around. So I owe most of it to him. We kept that show going for 2 years. And he just got busy, you know, but I think he saw that I was comfortable with it, you know, so he was able to ease back a little bit and kind of let me take it over. So he started touring and traveling and was in the Bay like less and less. So I started kind of doing episodes on my own with guests for a while. Mm-hmm. He saw I was getting comfortable. And then I kind of just put that on pause, and then you and I and another friend started this show, and that was in 2018. And
it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
I feel like
we've kept it going ever since. So here we are.
So you always were sort of a funny person, or you just cracked a lot? Like, what was that always sort of your thing?
A talker, a yapper.
Yeah.
I've always been chatty, I guess. Inappropriately humorous. Yeah, you could say that.
I mean, you have your own sense of humor for sure.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people relate to it, though.
Yeah, it's kind of always been like that from trauma.
Yeah. So where do you think your humor came from? From growing up as a kid? Just over...
I have a really funny mom.
Yeah?
So my mom is hilarious.
Yeah.
And other family members also, but yeah, my mom is very quick-witted and funny. So I think I got it from her, and my kids got it from me.
Got
it. Yeah, I think it was a hereditary thing.
When did you start realizing that was sort of a way to connect with people?
I think just the feedback I was getting, even from the first show, it just... people really fucked with it, and they wanted more episodes, and... I wasn't doing them very consistent. Like, it would be like every 2 weeks or every week and a half or something like that. I couldn't really keep a set schedule because, you know, it was kind of up in the air when I would be able to record with him or if I had to do it on my own and, you know, booking studio time and all that kind of stuff. So they weren't so consistent, but the demand was there.
Right.
And so I was like, I got to get this going. Like,
so when you started Hello Dysfunction with your friend, did you kind of know what you were doing, or did you just want someone you could talk to who you felt comfortable with?
We had really good chemistry. And yeah, she's a funny person. So me and her bouncing off each other, just the timing was right. And yeah, we had the same humor for sure.
So it made it easy for you to sit down and kind of do your thing.
Right. And I already knew I had learned podcasting and had 2 years into it. So that made it really easy for me to just show her and like, you know, be careful with talking over each other and, you know, stuff like that. We eventually got our rhythm.
Yeah. And I think people tuned in for that. What do you think is different now?
Now, well, they knew what to expect when it was me and her. So they kind of, even though there were some changes over the years, like it felt really familiar. And, you know, now different energies coming in and stuff like that. I'm like matching the guest. It's, you know, it changes. Every guest is different.
Do you feel like it's nice to be able to do different things and have these guests, or does it feel, 'cause I know it's a lot more work.
It is. But I always wanted to have more guests. She did too. But because of the space that we were recording in before, we weren't really able to do that. That wasn't an option for us. But we always wanted to have guests. That was always a goal. Good. So now that we're able to do that, and I can, you know, have whoever I want and keep it more interesting, I think, like, I'm really happy about it.
So do you see this sort of as an evolution?
Yeah. Do you growth for the show, for sure.
So you want to try other things as well?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now, I'm good at picking what's interesting, and I'm a nosy person by nature, but I'm very interested in like all walks of life, like anybody, the garbage man, whoever, like everyone has an interesting story to tell. And I feel like I'm good at pulling those conversations out of people.
Yeah.
Just and in life.
Finding those interesting things and highlighting them.
Too. Yeah. I know how to keep it interesting for sure.
What do you want Hello Dysfunction listeners to know about you right now, in this moment? What feels important?
To know about me?
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily. Like, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm dedicated. This is my career. I take it seriously. I'm not going to waste y'all time. I'm not going to waste my own time. You know?
Do people ever not get your Bay Area humor? Your style humor, do you feel like?
I wouldn't even call it Bay Area humor. Just my humor in general. I kind of know how far I can go with people.
Got it.
I follow other people's lead. I learned that early on. Shocking people with the shit that they might not find funny. I kind of like feel people out first before I see like how dark I'm going to go with it. Yeah. Not for everybody. Yeah.
And it can get dark.
For sure.
Which is fun. Some people like that.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the old show was getting it all stagnant? Did you feel like it was, because I know that you do a lot of other creative things, and we had talked over the years about you wanting to do other types of shows, just other interests in general.
For sure. I feel like we were limited for a few different reasons, but not having the ability to really have guests held us back. Retelling of the same stories, you can only tell a story so many times before it's like, okay, you know, we got to get off that. I do feel like we were stuck in a space, and I wanted to make changes, and I think she might have wanted to make changes too, but we only had so much to work with at that time.
So when was the first time you started feeling kind of that energy of like wanting to get out and do something?
Maybe like 2 years ago.
So yeah. You've been really...
Yeah, 2 years ago I started talking about starting another show because I had the time and I wanted to record more and release more content. And that wasn't really an option, you know, when you're depending on other people to, you know, in their schedules and also like the editing and, you know, the help with all of that. Like there were a lot of different schedules that were a factor.
Do you think you learned a lot from that experience?
I did. Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah, for sure.
That's good.
I make sure I learn from every experience, but for sure, as far as like the show and producing and what goals I have, I think goals are really important. And I learned a lot.
Yeah, it can be tough. The whole situation between friendship, business, podcast chemistry, that's a lot. What do you think about that part of it? Did that seem like overwhelming trying to do, wear all those hats?
Trying to manage both friendship and business?
And I feel like you were...
Would I recommend it? Probably not.
Or would you go about it differently, maybe? Now,
I would,
you know.
If I did work with another friend again, I would make sure that there was more structure to whatever we're doing. That's the problem. There wasn't a lot of structure. And we were kind of just a little too flexible with everything. So that hurt us, I think.
I feel like a lot of the story between you two and what happened, you really haven't put out there. Do you feel like at some point you want to kind of tell that story?
Because it's my story. So, yeah, I think I will. I've tried to be respectful about everything and her departure. As some of you know, on Patreon, I did explain a little bit further in detail what was going on. But I think as time goes on and it's less emotional for both of us, mm-hmm. you know, as time goes on, I'll be more comfortable speaking about everything.
Do you think some casual listeners kind of got it wrong or made assumptions?
Yeah, a lot of people got it fucked up.
Yeah.
But I'm not going out of my way to really correct anybody. I might just tell them they got it wrong and like leave it at that, or, you know, not answer at all. Like, you know, I'm not really open to answering questions about
the situation. I feel like you've been really honest with your people on Patreon, maybe a little less public with it.
I feel like they're owed that.
And I think it's your right to share your story how you want to.
The main thing I want people to know is that this wasn't my decision. And I think that picture has been painted differently depending on who the conversations have been with.
Right.
But this wasn't my choice. I didn't want it to end. Well, I wanted it to change for sure, but I didn't want it to end. But I just think we got to a point where they didn't have the passion for the show
like I do. So did it feel more like hurt or relief finally to kind of let it go?
Both, for sure.
Got it.
Lots of hurt, but also huge relief that I can do what I wanted to do, because I had talked to her and also to you and also to a few other people about starting a new show in addition to Hello Dysfunction. A year and a half ago, I think I started talking to people about it, sat down with her a couple times, and I was like, look, like, I think I'm maxed out on the time I can get from you, but I still have like more to give and I want to record more. And so, you know, she was good with it. And we even got a domain and picked a name and got a concept and like really put it in motion. And then I started thinking about it and I'm like, let me, I think I was like, let me use this year, which was 2025. And I sat down with her again and I was like, let me just use this year before I do it. Let's just do one good push, you know, with Hello Dysfunction and like see what we can really get done like before I do it. Because even though I still plan to give just as much commitment to this show, I was like, why regrow a whole new show when, you know, we can figure it out, maybe advancing this show more.
Right. I think there was a point where you had even thought about the thought of her coming back, even though it was sort of ugly.
After she left this show?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to be honest, I'm still not against the idea, but it would be on certain terms, and I made that really clear. So,
yeah,
it's not really my choice. But
not at all.
I told her, you always have a career to come back to.
Well, that's good to know. I don't think people would realize that sort of empathy that you have. What's your idea of, what does loyalty mean to you? I know these are leading questions, but...
I mean, that's a good question. Loyalty to me is how, like, I feel like you could really show how loyal you are when things get tough. That's the biggest test of loyalty to me. Like, when things are good, it's real easy to say you're loyal and, you know, I love you forever, your family, your whatever, you know, we're in this forever.
During good times, right?
Yeah, it's real easy to say it. But when it's actually tested in a difficult situation, that's when true colors show. And that's my idea of loyalty, is how you act when shit gets tough.
How do you feel about being online in parasocial relationships or even relationships with your listeners? Because I feel
it's tricky. Yeah. I mean, it's tricky because I've met a lot of my longtime, close, damn near family friends through parasocial online relationships. I've dated, had serious romantic relationships through meeting people online. Like, you know, to me, I take the internet and those interactions very seriously because I know the potential for what they can turn into.
Part of my question was like, is there even a difference anymore?
Because not really, not to me. Maybe to someone that's not online that much, but I'm online all day and I have regular interactions with people every fucking day, more so than people in real life.
So I guess you would say that you feel misunderstood online and in person, or both?
Misunderstood?
I mean, do you feel the same? Do you have the same reaction from someone maybe who understands you or doesn't understand you the same way you would in real life with someone online?
I would say people online understand me better than people in real life.
That's interesting.
Because I interact with them more.
Got it.
Than people in real life. And family.
And they follow you and kind of see what you're doing.
Yeah. So that's how I keep in touch with everyone. Family, friends, you know.
Do you feel misunderstood or do you feel like you are who you are and that's what you get?
Not necessarily misunderstood. I've talked before about how every single person in your life knows a different version of you.
Right.
And it's a scary thought, but it's really true. Like, I have friends like that have only seen me drunk or partying. You know, they know that me. I know some people that only know me sober and in like these wholesome familial settings. You know, that's a different me. That's the only me they know. Like, but that's two totally different people, right? But they're both still me. Like,
is that easier for you that way? Or
it's not, a scary like, thought for me.
I mean, but what if someone totally knew you in all those ways? Is that
no one knows me in all those ways.
Interesting.
Yeah, no one does.
I feel like I would want someone to know me in totality, at least on a certain level. So it's interesting that you like to keep those.
I mean, it is what it is. It's not by choice.
Oh, no,
it's just no one's with me through everything. So it's like my family, for example, there's so many sides of me they've never seen.
Right.
Best friends, whoever, they haven't been with me in relationships or in professional settings or you know what I mean? So it's like misunderstood. I'm gonna always be misunderstood by somebody. I think we all are. I don't put too much thought on that.
But you're polarizing. You know you are. And
I try to show all sides of me, like the good and the bad. I'm not one of those that just highlights all the good and don't show when I'm struggling. I think I'm really open about that. But still, like, you know, you don't know everything about anybody.
Got it.
We're all misunderstood.
Do you think there was like a specific moment in your life that kind of changed the way you look at things or see the world? Or do you just think it's just a slow evolution? Was there anything, was there a certain event that may have had you...
No specific event.
No certain trauma that I'm searching for.
I've been getting let down since childhood.
Got it.
So to be honest, that shaped who I am and how I see the world and how I view other people and relationships. I'm very aware that anybody could leave at any time. The first person that left was my mom. Like, I don't count on anybody to stay around forever. So when a best friend leaves my life, a partner, a child, whoever, like, I expect it a little bit.
Do you think that people expect you to be okay and you're just going to handle it?
Yeah.
That's heavy. That's a lot to bear. Yeah. I mean, it is. How often do you think you act like you're good when you're absolutely not good?
Every other day.
Yeah. You feel like you have to put a good face on for everyone in your life, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. For my kids.
It makes you a good mother. I mean, it's tough to do, but
I don't always hide it. Like, my kids, like, see me cry a lot. Like peas will see me upset. And it's kind of regular. Like, she won't even freak out and be like, oh, my God, like, are you okay or whatever? I think she just kind of knows. Like, it's normal to her because she's seen it.
Well, I think it's good to show emotion.
So she doesn't panic, for sure, if she sees me upset.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. It's quiet. You know, I'd be upset quietly. I'm not, like, screaming through the house or anything. So it's okay.
Do you think that emotion has made your children emotional?
Yeah, they're very emotional.
That's good.
Like, I have a son that cries very easily. And I like that he's comfortable because he don't give a fuck. He'll cry in front of whoever.
That's, like, that's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt embarrassed to do any of that.
Yeah, like, he ain't embarrassed at all. Like, he'll cry in front of a girlfriend, his friends, his cousins, whoever. Like, you know, I have very emotional kids. They're like me, though, in that way.
Got it. So, just to kind of switch lanes, name something that you used to judge people for.
Living with their parents.
Yeah. You judge them
differently. Not having a car. Dope fiends. I would judge dope fiends. Growing up, I sold drugs for most of my life. And I would look at dope fiends like very judgy, like never considering like how they got there, like kind of looked at it like that's your choice, you know, like I don't feel sorry for you. That's your fucking choice. Now that I'm older and I've gotten softer and I've learned a little bit, I know that almost all drug addiction stems from trauma.
Right.
Usually it's childhood trauma. So I look at them with whole new eyes now.
Yeah. One thing I can say about you is you're not afraid to change your mind.
Oh, no, I'm not.
And I think that's a good thing.
I change my mind a lot. Yeah. But I think everybody should be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
If you're stubborn, like you're holding yourself back. When you're presented with new information, like you have to be open to changing your mind after that, right? Like,
yeah, no,
I've never claimed to know everything. So if I learn something new about something I feel really passionate about, yeah, I'll change my mind quick.
That's good.
Yeah.
When you're wrong in the moment, do you admit it?
If I know I'm wrong?
Yeah, in the moment, if you've already took a stance and then you're...
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm not too stubborn to stand on... Like, even if I'm wrong... Like, yeah.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
I'll admit it. That don't mean I'll back down, but I'll admit it. Does that make sense?
That it does.
Yeah.
Give me an opinion you already know is going to start a fight. Like, that someone's going to blast off on, but you're standing on it.
That all men should be circumcised. Huge argument.
I guess with some people who aren't.
I mean, a lot of people are passionate about it and they look at it as mutilating babies. And I get it, but it's some good mutilation for them. It'll benefit them in the future. Listen,
it's crazy.
Mutilate them as adults again. Yeah. Do it again to chill them out as adults. But no, the amount of people that I know that have gotten circumcised as an adult due to like complications and shit.
Yeah.
It's enough for me to think I'm right in my thinking.
Anything where like there's another orifice that can like create
problems. Yeah. Get rid of that.
Nasty.
Get problems. It out of here.
Yeah.
That tends to stir up arguments when I mention that.
So do you think you learn more shit the hard way or the smart way?
Both. I do a lot of research. Lots of research. So I know a lot the proper way, but I also learn the hard way. Not so much now. I think I move a little more carefully than I used to. I used to learn everything falling on my ass. But now, no, I take that back. Not necessarily, because I had a lot of people in my life that gave me good game growing up, too. And I'm good at, like, paying attention to people and how they move and knowing, like, if I want to do well and they're doing well, I could learn something from them, you know? So I didn't always learn the hard way.
Has there been anything you've learned from a guest on the show that you were surprised to learn or just shocked you or anything that stands out?
That shocked me?
I mean, just something that stood out that you didn't know about that guest.
Let me think about this. Jose is always really shocking.
Yeah, I gotta admit.
He stands out the most.
That's funny. Yes.
Love him down. Yeah. Yeah. He lives really freely and I love that about him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say I learned a little bit, you know, about him and how he balances being responsible and being wild. Both are possible.
He's one for the books for sure.
Yeah.
Go listen to either episode.
Please. Yeah, if you haven't heard those, you will enjoy yourself.
What's one a big thing that someone could do that can make you immediately step back, like an immediate kind of red flag where you just walk up
have on... Have a substance abuse problem. I've walked away from someone that I thought I could have saw myself like marrying, like because they were a severe alcoholic and drug user. And it wasn't even like I wanted to step back and just be friends again. And we tried that, but it killed that too. It made it to where I couldn't even maintain a friendship. And that really fucking hurt me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about the Bay Area? I mean, obviously it has its own culture, its own sort of way of life. And you're from
Richmond.
Is there anything you maybe miss from growing up in that Bay Area of the time when you were growing up?
It being affordable, you being able to kind of move around, like people out of high school and shit, they were able to kind of bounce around more, maybe move to Berkeley, maybe move to Oakland, maybe move, you know, we don't have that option anymore. Like, it's really limited. You can't move where you want to move. Like, I would love to move to like Berkeley or somewhere. I can't. Like, I can only move where I can afford to move now.
Got it.
And that's fucked up because also just a lot of the culture that I grew up with that made us who we are is gone. And it's evaporating, and it's really fucked up. So I miss all that.
Do you think that's because of gentrification?
It's absolutely because of gentrification. Yeah. Because a lot of those businesses and shit, restaurants, whatever, that I grew up around, they couldn't afford the rent anymore, and they got pushed out.
Got it.
So
what's Richmond? What's the biggest difference now in Richmond then?
Richmond now is like all Mexican and a lot of Brazilian. It's very different. It was way more diverse when I was growing up. I grew up around a lot of Southeast Asians, a lot of Black folks. It was like majority Black folks in my neighborhood where I grew up at. It's not like that anymore. I don't think any of the families I grew up with live there anymore.
It's like a whole new place.
It's a whole new, yeah. It's like almost unrecognizable. Sad.
Do you feel like you've changed since season two started? Like
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm handling my business a lot more. I'm more excited to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll work every day. Like if I physically feel up to it, like, you know, I feel like I'm more motivated than ever because it's on me now, you know? So it's like, yeah.
My next question was name something you're proud of that people don't talk about enough. But I feel like it's your show not to answer the question that I wrote.
My show, my household.
And how much you handle business.
I handle business in all departments of my life.
And how much
I
don't, work it is. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's
a lot of fucking work. Yeah. I make a lot of shit look easy, but I'm a hard worker and I do this shit, like, aside from all the help I get from you, but like running my household and shit, like, that's on me. Like, I don't have people carrying me through life. And, you know, I think that a lot of people don't really know that about me.
Yeah.
I don't broadcast it, you know, but yeah it's definitely all on me.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that, you know.
I think you should be.
Yeah. No one can take it away from me. That's the good thing about it.
So a lot of people know you as a dom. I feel like that's a big part of your identity.
You talk
about it on the show.
It is.
Are you shy about sex stuff or only when people make it weird? Do you feel comfortable talking about it with people?
I'm totally open with talking about it. Totally comfortable with that. The only time I'm weird about sex stuff is probably in relationships, honestly.
Yeah.
Like with a partner, I'm way more shy and like, because I care more, you know, like I care what my partner thinks. So like I'm way more hesitant to maybe do everything with a partner opposed to like with a client. With a client, I'll do whatever. And like, you know.
Do you think that makes it weird for the partner?
Maybe if they have an expectation.
Got it. But do you try not to give an expectation?
I don't. I don't give an expectation.
So in your personal life, are you attracted to different people? If it's men,
all
women, trans people?
All different people.
So it's a chemistry thing.
yeah, I'm pansexual. Like, I'm attracted to anyone. Like, male, female, non-binary, trans, whoever. Like, I've always been that way my whole life.
So it's more about energy, maybe?
Energies. Yeah, there's no physical type. Gotcha. There's no, yeah, I don't have a type. If you lined up all my partners over my lifetime, like...
The Benetton ad?
Yeah, exactly. they don't even look like they know each other.
That's interesting. It's so different with your partner versus clients, et cetera.
Yeah.
Do you think people kind of understand being sexually open? Like, do people understand the concept, or they kind of just try to put that person, or maybe label?
It depends how they grew up, you know? Like, if they grew up and lived like a sheltered life and weren't exposed to a lot growing up, they might not get it, you know, or think that somebody's being wild, or, you know, but like, I'm regular to a lot of people. I'm mild to somebody, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it just really depends.
But you come across a lot of people. Do you feel like it's confusing for some people to kind of figure out what's going on? Or you're just kind of like, ask, or...
People don't hesitate to ask questions. That's one thing. If they want to know something or they're confused, they ask. Even when I don't want them to ask, they ask. So, yeah, it's never really been an issue.
Yeah. What do you think about, like, do you think people are, just people in general, are scared to sort of admit who and what they're attracted to?
For sure. Because of stigma.
Yeah?
For sure. Yeah. I know that for a fact, that a lot of people suppress what their real attractions or interests might be depending on other people. People are way too worried about what other people think. And if that was reduced, a lot more people would be living differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I know people that are bored to death in relationships and marriages and stuck because they care what their family thinks or what their peers think. And like, I know what they're really into. Like,
yeah,
that's what keeps me in business, you know, like, gotcha. Yeah.
Do men make flirting harder than it needs to be? Do women make flirting harder than it needs to be? Do you feel like people are scared to approach? Or?
No, I think I'm a Gemini, so I'm a natural flirt. I flirt with everybody. I flirt when it's not even necessary to flirt. There's no reason for it.
You just throw it out there.
Yeah. Hmm. Like, who, old people, whoever, like, I'm flirting with anybody. And, there's no intent behind it, you know? So, like, I tend to bring that out of people, I think, too, sometimes. So people are pretty comfortable being flirty around me. I don't really see people, like, struggling with it or, like, I don't know.
Do you think people sort of fetishize open-minded people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When men specifically find out, like, what I do, they think, like, they'll be like, okay, but I don't want any ass play. Like, you know, but they'll think that they're going to get, like, this porn star experience from me.
Right.
And I'm like, that's so far from the truth. Like, that's not, you're not getting any of that from me, you know? Like,
because their version is maybe a porno movie.
A porn, yeah. And, like, dom porn is not real life dom sessions. Like, it's, I've talked about that many times. Like, it gives you a false idea and a false hope of what, like, a real dom session looks like.
Yeah.
So if someone finds out what I do, they think I'm like this wild sex kitten, and I'm like, you know, just insatiable. And it's so not like that at all for me anyway.
Do you think people overthink sexuality instead of just being honest with themselves?
Yeah, but I think that comes from fear.
Do you think
being judged?
Do you
or
think the Bay Area has sort of helped you be open-minded? Because it's
for sure, yeah.
Were you
I can't imagine it growing up anywhere else.
Have you gone other places and been sort of shocked, or did you just know that about the Bay Area?
Just talking to people and meeting people from all over the country. Like, I grew up, my friend's mom would take us to Pride when we were like 11 and 12 years old, and I was seeing like fully naked adults, like, you know, just comfortable out on the street walking around. I was seeing people, you know, from birth, like always seeing gay people, trans people, whatever, like being exposed to that. Like, so I can't imagine like growing up somewhere else and, you know, being judged or.
Yeah. Not being able to be who you want to be.
Yeah.
That's sort of something that you sort of grew up knowing somehow.
That it was all okay. Yeah. Which so is, being from here, it was definitely a plus.
Is there one thing someone can say that instantly kills the sexy vibe? Just something that someone can do that'll immediately turn you off?
Maybe try to take a dominant role with me. Like, I've had people, like, during sex or something, like, tell me to call them daddy or something. And it's like, get the fuck away from me. Like, that's never going to happen.
So
like,
you consider yourself
daddy?
Dominant.
I'm daddy.
A dominant person. Personality wise,
I'm a lifestyle dom. I'm not, this isn't work. Like, I've been dominant since I was born. Like, this is natural for me. This is most comfortable. This is me. I've tried to switch in or at least be like match someone, you know, but I've never been comfortable in the submissive role.
Got it.
Huh? Yeah.
So you don't have a type. You would just say it's completely, it's just random.
It is.
Have you ever been surprised?
Shocked.
Like,
shocked, yes.
Do you think people in the world are way more open-minded now, or is it just because of the internet?
No.
Do you think it appears that way, though, because you see so much?
No.
No?
No. I meet a lot of people that are, I'm shocked by how many people are homophobic to this day, or low-key racist to this day, or, like, super fucking judgy. Like, you would think in 2026 that was better. And I'm like reminded a little too often that
it's not. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, no, I don't think more people are open-minded. I think they've been exposed to more, but it hasn't like changed their way of thinking at all.
Yeah.
You know, there's very mm-hmm. hateful people on the internet. There's very hateful people in real life. You know, I've ended friendships and shit over it. There's still a lot of disgusting people.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Has a listener ever said some crazy, unhinged shit that you still think about today?
No, not that I've thought about until you just now asked the question. I'm good at kind of just
to mind?
Putting shit. I've been stalked. I've been stalked. I've had people, bring up family members and like try to shoot me low blows about personal situations that I chose to share, shit like that.
Yeah.
But it's not nothing I think about until I'm asked a question like this. Like it don't, you know, I put it out in my mind. I don't think about it.
I got you.
Yeah.
I could ask you like another ridiculous question, but like, what would a younger you tell yourself today? Is there anything?
You got this.
You got it? You did that?
Don't worry. You got this.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do you forgive people easy?
I do.
You do?
Too easily, actually. I wish I didn't.
Why do you think you are that way? Because you're so...
I think my memory plays a big part in that because I tend to forget how fucking mad I was, or I'm really good at just forgetting why I cut people off in the first place. And so it makes it easier for me to like forgive them later when mm-hmm. I shouldn't. And yeah, I worry about that sometimes. Like I need to just cut people off sometimes and be completely done with it. But like I'm nosy and I want to know how people are doing and I might want to reconnect to find that out. Like, I don't know.
So you feel like you can make up with anyone?
Pretty much. I'm way too forgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I don't hold grudges or anything. Way too forgiving.
All right. Well, I think that's good. That's
all right. Well, thanks for sitting in with us. And yeah, subscribe, rate, review, leave comments, all that good stuff. Thank you.